like to introduce our guest now, Dr. Glenn Berger. He's a psychotherapist, lives in New York City. He actually started his career in the music business, working in a recording studio, where he worked with artists like Bob Dylan, Frank Sinatra, and Mick Jagger. But after about 20 years, he found himself in crisis and decided to change his life. So we went back to school and opened his practice in New York. He's just now completing his first book, which is titled Finding the Lost Heart, A New Path to Growth, Love, and Wisdom. In the book, he uses fairy tales, the latest scientific research, and stories of his psychotherapy clients to tell us how we lose our heart and what we need to do to find it again so we can realize our full potential. It's our great pleasure to have Glenn with us today. He joins us by telephone. So everybody relax, get in a comfortable chair. Glenn, how are you?
I'm terrific. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You've had two careers, the first in the music business, rock and roll. Why did you make the switch?
Well, I had two abiding interests starting at a very young age, psychology and music. And when I was a teenager, I thought that music was far cooler than psychology. I wanted to meet the big stars and the great artists and be in the world of rock and roll. So I pursued that. And one thing that I observed when I started in the business, when I was 16 years of age, was that there came a time when people got to a certain age and they were no longer at the top of their game. And I did not want to continue past my time in the music business. I wanted to hang up my spikes at the right time. And my interests changed, and I became more and more interested in the inner world and understanding human nature. And so when the time was right and I reached the right age, because I do believe this work demands a certain degree of maturity, I made the switch.
I read a post on your blog about Joe Maneri.
Yes.
Tell us about your experience with him.
Joe Maneri was an experimental composer and musician that I was fortunate enough to meet several decades ago when I was in my early 20s and working at A&R Recording Studios in New York. After working for about 8 years, 20-hour days, I decided that it was time to take a break. And I wanted to study harmony and theory. And it was recommended to me that I go visit Joe, who was a teacher at the New England Conservatory of Music. And he had a great reputation. And so I went up to sit in on one of his classes. And I was anxious, even though I'd worked with many famous people. I hadn't been in that kind of institution. And Joe had that kind of reputation. And I walked into that room. And he came in late, and he had this rough voice, and he was this big guy. He was a little guy, but, you know, round, and he started talking to the class, and he said, "All you people think you're going to be at the Boston Symphony." And he said, "But not one of you are going to make it." The class was silent, shocked. And he said, "That's not what it's about anyway." He says, "I'm going to tell you what it's about." And he said, "I play nursing homes." He goes to nursing homes. He plays for the old people. Joe encounters this deaf guy in this nursing home, and he doesn't know what to do because he's a musician, and how can he give something to a deaf man? He was also a very spiritual guy, and so he looked up and he prayed to God, and he knew what to do. He took out his instrument. He was a clarinet player, and he looked deeply into this deaf man's eyes, and he began to blow. And within a minute or so, the deaf guy started to cry. And Joe stopped at this point in the story and said, "That's what it's all about." And the bell rang, and that was the end of the theory class. And I kind of wandered through the halls afterwards in shock. And it was a life lesson that stayed with me to this day. And when I talk about how there are many ways to find fulfillment with your creativity and your art, I think that's the lesson, is that it's about the love, and it's about the gifts that we give with our creativity, and not so much the glory or the fame.
I want to read an excerpt from the about section or preface of your book. We all struggle with the distance between who we are and who we would like to be, between the life we have and the life we imagine. Why is it so hard to reconcile those two?
Well, first of all, it was said of Prometheus, I think Prometheus said this, that we stand on our two feet because instead of looking at the ground, we gaze at the stars. And this is something that is intrinsic about being a human being, is that we aspire. We can imagine an ideal, and then we want to achieve that ideal. This is both our glory and our curse, because though we can imagine this ideal and we can always work toward achieving it, we also recognize the ways that we fall short of that ideal. This is so difficult for three different reasons. One is that existentially we are distanced from our connection to the all. As soon as we're born and made manifest, we're now separate human beings. We are wholly separated from everybody and everything else, and this is a difficult thing to live with. We always want to connect. Also, we have these patterns that have been going on since the dawn of humanity. Struggles between the generations, how one generation needs to die and allow the next generation to come in. And because of this struggle, which we don't take easily, this separates us from our essential nature. And finally, and most importantly to us in our day-to-day lives, is that each one of us in some way are wounded growing up. Our parents are imperfect. They too have what I call have a lost heart. And so they don't give us everything we need that will allow us to realize our optimal potentials. And so this is something that we each strive to overcome in our own lives. We each need to work towards becoming what we're meant to be. Aristotle had this notion that he called entelechy, which means that we each thing has an inherent purpose. The acorn is meant to be the oak tree, and we human beings ultimately are meant to love. And yet, because of the wounds that we suffer, we don't realize that optimal potential.
The title of the book is Finding the Lost Heart. What do you mean by a lost heart?
I have been on a lifelong quest to understand the root cause of unnecessary human suffering, the problems that people bring into my psychotherapy office every day. And that may seem like an audacious goal, that's something that humanity has struggled with since the dawn of time, that I could find the answer to. But I think we have to remember that it was just a short while ago that people didn't understand the nature of infectious diseases, or there was no anesthesia. So I believe that as people we can solve these apparently insoluble problems, and I want to do what I can to help that cause. Now, on my quest of looking for the answer to this big question, I encountered the writings of a Chinese sage named Mencius, who wrote 2,300 years ago. And I believe that he was on to the answer back then. And one of the things that he said that stopped me in my tracks was, pity the man who has lost his path and does not follow it, has lost his heart and does not go out and recover it. When people's dogs and chicks are lost, they go out and look for them. But when people's hearts or original nature are lost, they do not go out and look for them. The principle of self-cultivation consists in nothing but trying to find the lost heart. So this quote possessed me and has possessed me for over a decade because I believe that it held the answer to the root cause of unnecessary human suffering. And what does he mean by heart? I believe what he means is our essential nature. The great philosopher and theologian Paul Tillich said that we are estranged from our essential nature, that which we are meant to be. The heart is a symbol for that essential nature. So to have a lost heart means that we're distanced from that which we are meant to be. We all have the capacity for optimal thinking, for optimal feeling, for optimal imagining, for acting and loving, for connecting with others. That's our essential nature. And through our experience, those potentials become limited, and that's what it means to have a lost heart.
You talk about the significance of fairy tales in your book. Why do you think they're important? I mean, why do we hold on to them for so long and keep telling them?
We normally think of fairy tales as these innocent stories for children. I believe that fairy tales are important for adults to read, especially at this moment in our cultural history. We all need to develop fully our imaginative faculty. And in our culture, we don't have a lot of opportunity to do this in the world of reality TV and all the technologies that we have. People have become tone deaf to the language of symbols. And yet there are many aspects of human life that can only be conveyed in a symbolic way. Because our normal way of thinking, we think in terms of this or that, not this and that. And the deepest layers of understanding about human nature and the nature of the universe, we cannot grasp with our normal language. And stories like fairy tales reveal human nature and the nature of the universe in very direct ways if we can understand the language that they use. I'll give an example where it's very common in a fairy tale for the story to begin with the hero being called to adventure. And the first thing that happens to them is they go into the woods and they get lost. They're lost in the dark wood. Now, if you remember Dante's Inferno, which is not a fairy tale, but it's one of the most profound works ever written, at the beginning of that story, Dante finds himself in the middle of his life, lost in a dark wood. He doesn't know how he got there, and he doesn't know how to get out. Now, this is a circumstance that many grown-ups find themselves in the middle of their life. We all understand metaphorically what that means, to be lost in the dark wood. And so you see this element, or this kind of archetypal theme, running through endless fairy tales. So when I work with people in therapy, they'll often come in and they won't even necessarily know what their problem is, problem, quote unquote. And then they'll realize that they're lost, that they don't know where they are in their life, that they don't know the solution to their problems. And I say, that's wonderful, because that means you're on the adventure, you're on the journey. This is what happens in so many fairy tales. The story begins with the person finding themselves lost in the dark wood. Well, here you are. And inevitably, what happens in the story next is that hero meets a dwarf or a small animal, some unimpressive creature that offers help. And if the hero accepts that help, then they can find their way out of that wood and eventually find their princess or their prince and become king or queen of the realm. So it's also a great promise. In those stories, because it shows you that there is a way out. So these kinds of symbolic themes are everywhere in these fairy tales, and once you can just allow yourself to enter that realm of symbols, you can understand more deeply where you're at, and certainly how to find the thing that you're looking for. I have a personal theory about this, that fairy tales speak the truth. And they speak a truth that children can't articulate and that can't really be spoken in a direct way. And that is, all too often, parents cause their children harm. You know, we want to think of ourselves as parents as being all loving, and we don't want to face the fact that in many ways we do wound and damage our children. And I believe that the people who told these stories were communicating this to children in a way that validated their experience. So there was a the children understood this subliminally, and the adults who were telling the story did have the intention of communicating to the children, yes, we know that it's rough with your parents. We know, and Hansel and Gretel, the children get thrown into the forest and have to fend for themselves. In Beauty and the Beast, the father sells his daughter to the beast. In Cinderella, the girl suffers at the hands of her stepmother. There's endless variations on this, and I think that the child needs to know, yes, there's somebody who understands what they're going through. So I believe that people were aware of that element when they were telling these stories to children.
Well, I'm sorry we're out of time, Glenn, but thank you so much for coming by. We really enjoyed it. We hope to have you back sometime soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to know more about Dr. Berger and his work, or some more information about what we've discussed today, we've put some links on our blog. Just search for episode 5. We also, I think, we're going to put some excerpts from the interview that we didn't have time for today, if you want to hear some more.